we are. Hello, church.
Hello.
We are here at the very coveted right after lunch segment. This is where you keep putting your hands to the side, trying to find the lever that reclines the folding chair. I'm glad that you're here, and this will be a part one and a part two class. I'll be teaching again tomorrow. There are so many other good classes out there, though, that I hope you take advantage of them as much as you can. Josh Graves, my son-in-law, who spoke at 11, is speaking again, I think, at 4 across the way, and again in the morning at 9. And I know Josh Ross is speaking. It's just amazing. If I was here, I wouldn't come to hear me. That's all I'm saying. There are some better folk out there. But I do want to talk to you about touchstones today, and I want to talk to you about what that means. My life has been fragmented in many ways. We moved constantly. My father is 81, and he's never lived anywhere more than 3 years. Most was much less. Military, then missionary, and always ornery. And so he always had to keep moving. And we were raised in 7 countries, to where I don't really feel at home in any of them. Born in this country, when my parents were going to seminary, then yanked out and taken everywhere else. Because of this, I like it. It tickles me sometimes. People will say, well, I love your Irish accent or your Scottish accent or whatever. No, if you've ever been to those countries, it doesn't sound like this. This is just a train wreck of a fragmented life. And the older I get, the worse it gets. But here I am, and I want to talk to you about what do you hold on to when everything else shifts around you. Some of you grew up in a church where everything always happened the same way. Even the prayers were prayed the same way. There were certain phrases that you knew were coming. Guide, guard, and direct. And if it be thy will, guard, keep, and keep us until we come to the next appointed hour. You know, give the preacher a ready recollection. Lord, who are you, the sick of this congregation? And, you know, I'm thinking, I'm getting sick of this congregation. Is that for me? But those prayers were offered in the best of intentions, and they were offered sincerely, and God appreciated those prayers, no doubt. But then things changed. And sometimes they sang a different song, or they sang in a different way, or there was a praise team, or the kids wanted to do something else, and now you go into another Church of Christ, and you're thinking, well, they act different than we do, and you can get all lost. Well, the world can do this as well. I still own a house in Detroit. It's worth a third less now than it was when I bought it 10 years ago. Things change. And all of a sudden, what you counted on, my parents, aged 81, they were counting very much on a certain level of living in retirement, and that went away in 2008. And it's not, they don't have time for it to come back. My father said his 401k is a 101k now. They said it went so far south it's paying in pesos. And I went, yeah, I understand. And I said, Dad, don't worry. What if the worst happens, we're going to let Mama live with us. And we'll keep in touch with you. That gave him some comfort, I'm sure. In times that are perilous, I mean, we're facing another election. And we don't let our church get political, and I'm not going to be political here. There are Christians that vote for all parties, and there are Christians who do it sincerely in believing that that's the best thing God wants them to do. Fine. But it's uncertain, isn't it? It's uncertain. So what do you know? What are the things you can grasp onto? I want to take you back to Scotland for a little bit. A lot of you know in England, Stonehenge. You've seen the pictures at least, right? And you've seen it as... Now, we don't know who put it up, by the way. It was put up a long, long time before the Celts ever got there. The Celts didn't do it. The English didn't do it. They didn't show up until about 1000 AD. So who did this? Well, we don't know. And by the way, they didn't put it up quite like that. Always people say, well, you know, Stonehenge is an astronomical calendar. Because on a certain day, it lines up just right with that star. Okay. Here's an experiment. Take 2 dowels, just 2 sticks, ram them at random locations in your lawn. One of these days, that's going to line up to something. when we found Stonehenge, it was laying down. We're the ones that put it there. You know, and then said, well, yeah, that's probably how it fits. We don't know what they were put there for. Scotland has more than 1,000 standing stones. Some of them in groups, some of them in lines, some of them in circles. Some of them were very elaborately carved at one time, and now wind and rain and time has scrubbed them nearly bare, and others were bare, and then later peoples came through and carved things on them, like Ogham script and the like. And so it's confusing to know what were these things, but we do know how other people used them. Later, thousands of years later, people came through and they settled near these stones. And these stones belonged to these people, and those stones belonged to those people. And they became the place that marked who you were. This is where we meet to buy and sell cattle, or to arrange a marriage, or to deal with a legal matter. This is where we live, and this is our people come here. This is our touchstone. When we touch that, it means this is who we are. Everybody needs one of those. Touchstones do two things. They remind you of who you are and who you aren't. Now, for about 9 years, we lived in West Virginia, in Morgantown. Wonderful, wonderful folk. And yeah, there you are. Both of them followed me. lovely people, so they are. And as we lived there and enjoyed it, my daughter, who was homeschooled, got to swim with the West Virginia University swim team, because West Virginia University is very much open arms to local homeschool kids, and it gets them involved in these things. Well, if you've ever been to a swim meet, you know that they last, on average, about 6 years. It is the most awful thing you've ever been through. You're sitting there inhaling chlorine while one set of blue kids after another jumps into the water. And it goes on, you know, they'll say, this is heat number 47 out of how many? 510. Okay. This is why they don't let guns on campus. But it's one of the only fun things to break the monotony was that every now and then the Kara's team would get together and they'd do a cheer. Now, I don't know cheers, can't do cheers, and will not approximate a cheer. But basically, it was, we're from West Virginia and we're the best and you're not, so there. And then the team from Maryland would say, we're from Maryland and we're the best and you're not, so there. And then the team from Delaware and the kid from Rhode Island would do his little thing. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. The cheers, battle of the cheers. Well, swimming is rather like ice skating. There's a world championship every 6 days. So we had to go do another one, and the Kara's team decided to liven it up again, and they, you know, we're from West Virginia, and you're not, and that's it, you know. And it was dead silent. They had made an error. It was an intrastate match. Everybody was from West Virginia. And a touchstone only works if it identifies who you are and who you're not. That's really important. And in everybody's life, we need to know what the touchstones are. They are the recentering points of our lives. They give us meaning, and they remind us of our meaning. They stand as identifying marks for us. Well, they come in a stunning variety. For many of you, it's family. For me, it is, but mainly, it's my wife. I travel all over, travel far more than I'd like to, but that's the role I've been given. And as I do all of this, my favorite place in the world is 4 feet inside my front door, because that's where I'm going to see my wife. I married my girlfriend 32 years ago, and she's still my girlfriend. That's where I want to be. You might say, why don't you take her with you? Because I love her. And this is too wearing to do to such a delicate flower. So anyway, she is a touchstone for me. She sent me a couple of texts today that made all the difference in the world. She helps recenter me. Playing with my grandsons is a touchstone for me. For some of you, family reunions are a touchstone. Not for me so much, as we discussed last night. Last time I went to a family reunion, I wanted to call America's Most Wanted and say, I think I found everybody. So I don't do those at all. Now, my mom and dad are Christians, and one sister is kind of a Christian, so those are nice to me. But most of my family I was very estranged from. Now, I did play with my grandfather every week. Technically, he was dead, but they had cremated him and put his ashes in my Etch-a-Sketch, and so we were able to bond. Don't do that to me. You're going to be telling that before the night's over. Just remember to tell everybody it was Rick Ashley who said it. My family, other than my immediate family, are not my touchstones, but they, immediate family, absolutely are. This is a touchstone for me. To be around other Christians from other places, many of you that I've not seen since we first came to back to America in the mid-80s, it's been wonderful. It always is. A touchstone. For others of you, your family is a nightmare. You've had divorces, you've had whatever, and that's just not going to be it. But maybe the flag is one of your touchstones. Some of you, I was born in this country. My parents went to seminary. And this country means a lot to us. And with our son, he's just recently finished his service, but as our son became our first United States Marine, that was very important to us, to hang up the flag. You know, that's our flag. And I love watching the Olympics when you live in America, because you got to see the people that win. When you're watching it in Britain, you don't. You just see the person, they're falling off their skis and rolling down the hill, and they're going, "Well, he's done quite a lot better this year, didn't he? Yes. Came in 47th, I believe, yes." You know, the only ice skaters we see are the ones that drowned, and that's just not good. And so, but I like watching it from here. And when I see the flag, I go to a ball game. We used to go to Tiger Stadium a lot. And watch the best team play. And as we would watch the Tigers, they'd run up the flag. I'd always get choked up. And we'd always have friends that would lean over and say, but you're Scottish. And I'd say, you know, I'm not from anywhere. That's the point. But that means something to me. And therefore, throws a chill up and down when I see it. When we see a Marine Corps commercial, we still tear up because we think of the times our son was gone from us. It's a touchstone. But for some of you, it might be church, whether it's every week or twice a year, or in Scotland, you go when you're born and when you're baptized and or married rather than when you're buried. We like to call that hatched, matched, and dispatched. That's your church. That's your kirk right there. And you, many of you, one of the questions I ask is, what is your name and where are you from? And you even have it proudly on your sticker there, the church that you go to. Those are your people. I have to unfriend people on Facebook a lot because they get on my page and say things I don't want them to say. And one of them is a relative. And it offended her a lot. She wrote me a very long email. And I wrote back and I said, my family are those that love Jesus that I meet everywhere I go. Just because somebody else slept with somebody else upriver somewhere doesn't make you family. This is my touchstone. These are my people. This is our family reunion. For others of you, your church is in turmoil. That's not going to be it. You need to know what your touchstones are. It might be a vacation spot. And for some of you, it might be fishing. Not for me. My father-in-law lives in Fredericksburg, Texas, and he's a good man who still doesn't know what he did to deserve me. But he goes out, he fly fishes. Now, fly fishing to me is drawing pictures in the sky with string. Because it's like, you know, you've got to get the thing wet or they're not going to bite it. And he's just, it's going all over the place. And, you know, there he's done the Sistine Chapel, you know, and it's just... So every time he's taken me, I bring a backpack full of books, and now he won't take me anymore, so I consider that a win. Others of you, it's going out camping. To me, camping is when they don't have room service at the hotel. I grew up in the mission field, I've camped. I'm done. Whatever those touchstones are, there are some things that that might come out of the blue. When I first came back to the States, in fact, Rick actually asked me over lunch. He said, have you ever been to St. Andrews? Yeah, lots of times. Walked the course, walked around it like. Did you ever play it? No. Why not? I thought golf was silly. Living in Scotland, I know. I thought, why would you work that hard to get the ball in the hole? You just reach in and pull it out. What's the point? Mine's already out. When? But when I came to America, I came to a little church in Lancaster, Ohio. And the elders there were golf mad. The church was as well. They had their meetings at a par three. They handed me borrowed clubs. I was going, what are you doing? They were Patty Berg. Yes, lady clubs. I'm going, what? You don't hand a club to a minister before an elders meeting. That's just one of the rules. But they said, no, you have to play golf. And that was the most horrid thing. But we finally got around 9 holes. And I had to stop for meals 3 times. And then they said, oh, we're having a scramble on Saturday. And I thought, that sounds lovely. Because I thought it was like a breakfast. And then they tried to explain it to me. And they said, and the minister has to be there. But I lucked out because somebody died and I had a funeral. But I made the mistake of driving by later to see how they were doing, and they were all standing there waiting on me. I got out in my suit. I said, I'm in my suit. And they said, oh, that's all right. You can play in those shoes, and handed me clubs. And I'm standing up there. I've only played 9 holes before at a par 3. I don't want to be here. And now I'm starting to think the person I buried was the lucky one. Everyone's yelling catcalls and the like back here. And I hit the ball, and it basically went where I wanted it to go. Well, later some people came up to me, and they said, how in the world were you able to make contact with all that going on? And I told them the truth. Inside my head, I was saying to the ball, no matter where you go, or even if you go, Jesus loves me. That's a touchstone for me. Some people hang their Christian identity upon so many little things that when one of them breaks, it all goes away. How many people wrote Isaiah, I don't care if it's 1 or if it's 4, or if it was 2 with advice from a wife, I don't care. Others will say, well, how many times did Peter do this? And they argue about these little things. And I look at them and say, that's not my touchstone. My touchstone is not being able to come into a church building and know what's going to happen next. Because God's not predictable. So that's not one of my touchstones. My touchstone is God. I believe in Him. I didn't know. Well, it's hard to say. I almost said I didn't used to. There was a period of my life where I tried to be an atheist. But I wasn't good at it. It's odd. There are no holidays, which is sad. Nobody wants to put up a tree to the birth of nobody in particular. There are just problems with it. And science drove me back into faith to where I had to deal with the fact that there is a God. Well, now when I look out and see things in nature, I thank God. It's a touching of the touchstone. I'm one of God's people. With us, we need to know what our touchstones are, because the world is going to do everything it can to take your touchstones away from you. Everything it can. It wants to continually move the finish line. It wants to make you pursue what they will make sure you cannot get. If you don't understand what I mean, let's put it to you this way. I'm going to become a prophet now and make a prophecy. Today is Thursday. Tomorrow will begin a sale at Kohl's. I know. I'm pretty impressed as well. And Sears. Sears is going to join in the sale thing this weekend. Now, somebody, if you're sitting there thinking, really? You're the person I want to talk to. It was right before Christmas and all those, get there at 6 o'clock in the morning sales. And I was driving, I had to get to the hospital to visit somebody in emergency. And as I was driving by, I looked over, and there in Detroit, in the dark and the cold and the wind and the snow, were standing a line of people outside Kohl's. I'm going, there's nothing in there worth dying for. What are you doing here? But the reason it works, they do it is because it works. We blow up a giant Godzilla balloon and people come buy cars. We say, we'll give you free hot dogs for the kegs, and people show up. Yeah, I bought the truck for $42,000, but I got two hot dogs. You know that? The world knows it panics us into doing this sort of thing. When are you done playing Barbie? Isn't most of our life just a long Barbie game? We have to keep buying the accessories. And you have to keep collecting the friends. And you have to make sure everybody has everything. Sad to say, most people never get out of the Barbie game. When we lived in Central Ohio, they said the world's largest Ford dealer, and he had a commercial every 15 minutes. And one of the greatest reliefs of my life was when we moved out of Central Ohio and I didn't have to hear him. Well, I still go back to Central Ohio 5 or 6 times a year to teach or to visit people. And guess who's still on? And he's still saying, if you don't get a car this weekend, it's basically over. You'll never be able to have a car. It's walking for you, buddy. Good luck buying shoes, but Kohl's is having a sale. And Buddy's Carpet Barn's been going out of business for 25 years now. The world, if it can't get you that way, will try to get you with vague feelings of disease about yourself. As far as I know, America is the only country where you can advertise pharmaceuticals that you can't get without your doctor. And so you're sitting there, they don't even tell you what it's for. And you just see two people walking along the beach with a Labrador. And at the very end of it, a drug name comes up and says, ask your doctor. I told my wife, we might need that. And she said, why? And I said, we don't have a house by the beach or a Labrador. And then she gives me what she says is a Skittle, but I wake up hours later. And then there are those commercials where people come in and say, your money is worthless. You still use dollars? That's not worth the paper it's printed on. You need gold. And we'll give you some gold if you send us the worthless money. Okay. Reminds me of when the Y2K fear was going. Man came to our house and he says, you guys have guns, don't you? And I said, well, yeah, we do. You know, we have enemies. So, yeah. And he had a look at a few of them and such. He goes, now, where do you store your food? And I said, sorry? He goes, you know, for Y2K. And I thought he was kidding, but he wasn't. He had a whole room dedicated to it. And he's going, no, you've got to. It's going to be all this other. He says, why don't you have any? And I looked at him and I said, I don't need it. I have firearms and I know where you live. The world wants to panic you. Have you seen the new pill for depression that they're advertising and heard the side effects? One of them's death. That's not a side effect. That's a reason to go ahead and be depressed. Suicide or thoughts of harm to yourself or others. Here, Billy. We'll be over there wearing padding, watching you carefully. The world wants to terrify you with money, with your health. What's the Bible say? Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth. And what does the world say? You better have those treasures. You better have a lot of them. Because you never know what's going to happen. Well, that's the reason why you get near your touchstone. It's not a reason why you ignore your touchstone. You put your treasures in heaven. My retirement plan is to be so nice to so many people that when I can't feed myself, they'll help me. Now, I might be putting way too much faith in my brethren. I'm aware of that. But that's basically... And if it fails, then, you know, I only have to hang around like a month. Then I'll be dead. So it's all right. It's okay. We have a community that not only all this stuff, but it's also a broken community. Now, some of you are old enough to remember that on... And I'm having to make this up because I don't remember nights and all that kind of stuff. I didn't look it up. You know, every Tuesday was Milton Berle. Or every Wednesday was Lucille Ball. or you knew who everybody was watching, right? So you knew who to talk about. Now we have many, many, many channels, and we don't know who's watching what. I go down to Louisiana once a year and spend a week down with them, so I watch swamp people to try to learn the language. And I was down last February, and I went into a Walmart. Now, no good story ever starts in a Louisiana Walmart. And about, I was there, and a lady started talking to me, and as God is my witness, I got nothing. I got no words. I'm pretty good with languages. I can even fake American, you know, if I have to. But this was just amazing. And so finally, I started doing this. And she looked down, she goes, what are you looking for? I said, subtitles. On TV, they have subtitles. And she just laughed. She knew immediately what. And so she switched to French and I could understand her. So we did that. Just, I did learn if you hear chew them, that's not good. But some of you have never watched Swamp People. You watch more educational TV, or you don't watch TV at all because you're religious. Yeah. Or you watch sports, or you watch news. But we have become divided. Even the news channels have who they are rooting for. And you tell me who you were watching or listening to, and I can tell you who you're rooting for. We have fragmented as a society. Do you see what the upshot of all this is? We've lost touch with our touchstones. In America anymore, it's even hard to say Merry Christmas. Now, I know some churches of Christ have nothing to do with Christmas, so why don't you just assume I don't either. But for the rest of you, because you have to, and I'm not, by the way, if somebody says Happy Holidays to me, I'm not offended. And I'm not saying, that's a war on Christmas. No, a war, people die. This one's not so bad. You know, they still let me shop in the Target, so I'm all right. But we have to talk about Kwanzaa, we have to talk about Hanukkah and the like, and yeah, I think every group should have their own holiday if they want it, but what's the us holiday? That's kind of broken, isn't it? So what do?
Thanksgiving.
We suffer. We are richer than the Sun King of France. We are richer than Solomon's richest dreams. Well, I know, you're thinking, no way, he had whole rooms full of jewels and gold and the like. Yeah, he did, but he couldn't get a banana in March. You can. You can even do that at a convenience store. Yeah, it's a little bruised, but you can get it. It's the one banana by the register. 800 donuts, one banana. That's about right. And you can adjust the heat in your house. And if you want to go from here to, let's say, Dallas, you can do it in hours, not a week or so. And the likelihood is you'll all survive the journey. You don't have to bury a couple along the way. That's pretty cool. I needed antibiotics or antibiotics to you colonials. And we love what you've done with our country. Anyway, there's some Native Americans out there saying, whose country? Anyway, the whole point of this is we have stuff. I needed antibiotics. I got them. Even 80 years ago, I couldn't get them. We are rich, and yet we are the least happy, most frustrated, pill-popping people. What happened? We lost touch with our touchstones. We lost touch with what really matters. And because of this, the world can bully us, and church people can bully us as well. I went to a Christian college lectureship. I'm not often asked. I don't know why. 3-piece suits and family edition Bibles and you know, drill cream. And they were ready. And they said, Brother Mead, we need you to come into this other room because there's been a lot of trouble in the churches around here. And they discussed some of that and said, oh, come on. And I said, no. That's all I said. It was just no. Wasn't mean. And they said, why not? And I said, I don't want to. So they told it to me all again like I wasn't there 5 minutes ago. When they were all done, I said, no. I said, why not? I said, I don't have to go in the little room. And I don't have to talk about people I don't know. And I don't have to argue about problems that you think you have. So I'm not going. There are some of them that still don't like me to this day, and that was over 20 years ago. Because I wouldn't go into the room. Guess what? I'm not going into the room. I don't have to go in the room. I don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. You don't have to let the world bully you like this. You can just say no and smile because you have a touchstone. If you've ever lived in Europe, you know about the Eurovision Song Contest. That's a great thing. Really is. It's so much fun. It's stupid, but it's fun. All the nations in Europe, all the free nations, work all year to find their song. It's like an American Idol for every nation. They find their song with their group. And because it's always done by committee, they're mainly bland songs by the time they get there. And we're all tired of them. But then they send everybody to Luxembourg for 4 days, and then two of these are televised, where they do their act and their song, and then all the nations of Europe vote, you know, their judges vote on the songs. Now, this was the event that I'm going to talk to you about happened in 1980, which is when the 70s and disco were dead, but nobody had informed them. So it was all spandex and glitter and hair gel. And it was smoke machines, and it was ultraviolet lights, and it was everyone was doing more than the other. It was insane. Silly, stupid, but train wreck funny. You had to watch it. When it finally came Germany's time, out came a girl. We'd later find out she was 17, 18 years old. Long blonde hair, very, very nice evening gown, very, very modest. She had a classical guitar in her hand and a stool. And my wife and I even looked at each other and said, "What's this?" Because everything had been a technicolor madness before this. So she sits down, she starts playing a simple three-chord song. But she's singing in German, so I don't know what she's saying. I do hear the crowd. You kind of hear an intake of breath. And Cammie looked at me, my wife, and she said, "So what? Does her dress fall off and now people are lowered from the ceiling?" You know, I'm going, I don't know what's going to happen. And then she sang the same song again, but she sang it in French, and that I understood. So I was going, "Oh." And Cammie said, "What?" And I said, "I bet she gets to English." And she did her fourth time through. And it was just a simple song about the world that we found it in. If you remember 1980, there was the CND, the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. There was trying to put missiles over there. It was just a horrid time. And this girl was just singing about, really all we want is a little peace. Just give us a little space and give us peace. And she hit a nerve. They won. Big time. Nobody was even close. Germany won that year. Because really all we want is peace. So we need to know where our touchstones are. What do you believe in? What will you die for? When my son shipped off to the Marine Corps, we found a few weeks later a letter he had written to some of his friends. Being a child of the aughts, as we call it, in this century, he had written it via email. And an extra copy was laying there in his stuff as we were putting it away. We read it, and I can't quote it to you, because even to this day I would cry about it. But he talked to his friends who were saying, "Why would you join in the middle of a war? Why would you do this? You could get hurt." And he wrote them saying, "Everybody dies, but not everybody matters before they die. Everybody dies, but not everybody lives before they die." And he talked about, if you don't have something you would die for, you have no reason to live. And it went on at great length. And we looked at each other, tears running down our cheeks, and we said, "He gets it. He got it. You got to know where you stand, and you got to be willing to die for it. That's your touchstone. If you like pie, it's probably not a touchstone. But if you're willing to die for pie..." That's sad. "But you got a touchstone, I'll give you that. I've had some pie I thought would kill me." But one of the first lessons in life is to learn what your touchstones are and see them daily. Visit them in your head. There are some things that I do every day just to recenter and know who I am. Now, those of you that use Apple products don't understand this, but you Windows people do. You have to hit the reset button. Because sometimes there's just too much junk in the system, and you've got to reset. What's that going to be for you? Is it going to be a long walk, a long prayer? Whatever it is, that's what you do. And it helps you to turn your head around to what reality is. A man asked me to go make some visits with him, so I said, "All right." And we had to stop in at his house for something. And he said, "Come on in." I'm going, "All right." We walk in, and he trips over some toys. There are toys all over the floor. He gets very angry. And he starts really chewing out his wife. I'm standing right there. And I finally just hear tap, tap, tap. He looked at me and I said, I'm right here in the room. And he was then trying to justify. And he's going, well, you know, she's home all day. And I went, shh. I looked at her. I said, be warmed and filled. You know, I'll take care of this. And she kind of backs off. And now he's getting nervous. And I looked at him and I said, why are there toys on the floor? He said, because my wife just won't. I said, why are there toys on the floor? And he thought for a while, started to sweat. And he said, well, because my kids just won't pay. I went, why are there toys on the floor? After a while, he finally said, because I have kids. And I went, do you know how many people would give an arm to have healthy kids that could play on the floor? When you trip over a toy, you don't think mess, you think blessing. You've got to learn how to reframe your life. So we didn't go visit other people. We went out and rode around in the car and talked. And I kept it at a speed so he couldn't leap out. It's important, people, to understand this. So I had a man talk to me once and say, his wife always insisted that he'd go with her when she went to the mall, and he hated it because she drug him to every single store and looked at every dress. Probably not a wee bit of an exaggeration. And then they'd go back and buy the first one she looked at. And I said, isn't that great news? And he looked at me and he goes, excuse me? And I said, she's a very picky, particular woman. Look who she picked. He hadn't thought of that. I didn't bring up, maybe she didn't used to be, but she's learned her lesson. You can reframe negatively as well. But there's no reason to go that direction. You can open up the refrigerator and say, there's nothing good to eat in here. Or you can say, yay, keeping to my diet. It's all right. If you have to go with the kids to an amusement park, you can either say, do I have to ride the roller coaster? Or you can clap in and just say, come Lord Jesus. I hate roller coasters. First of all, when that bar goes clunk, it's not tight enough. Have you noticed that? There's some play in mine. I need some styrofoam peanuts, and they don't like me at all. Where's the bathroom on this thing? We need to reframe. We need to rethink. When the world says get, that's not always good. Maybe we need a little bit more time alone with our touchstones. But again, I'm not telling you what yours are. Mine, I try to keep as limited as possible. A visit back to Scotland, that's one. Always seeing my wife, my children, that's one. My grandchildren, yeah. Being with church people, that's a touchstone. Prayer, definitely a touchstone. What about beliefs? Well, the belief in Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, absolutely. But most of the, I'm not going to expand it much more than that, because if you do, and one of those stones falls over, what are you going to do? You need to limit it to the core of what you believe. There is reality in this world. And you need to understand what reality is. You need to understand also that the world is going to try very hard to tell you there is no reality. That everything is just, you know, your imagination. I can remember, I still teach at Ohio State University. They fly me in a few times a year. And whenever I went one time, I was there early. And the lecture hall I was going to use was being used. So I slipped in the back, sat down to listen, and it became obvious that it was a beginning philosophy class, because the guy was wearing leather patches on his coat. And as he was going through all the things up there, I behaved, I was a good boy, until he told the stupid Buddha story, which that's not really the name of the story. The story is that the Buddha was once meditating, and he fell asleep, and he dreamed he was a butterfly. Then when he woke, he wondered, am I a man who dreamed I was a butterfly, or am I a butterfly dreaming I'm a man? And all the kids are going, oh. So my hand went up. He didn't know who I was. He assumed I was some sort of midlife crisis returnee. So I stood up and I said, well, to form a visual requires about 100,000 synapses. If you want the visual to be in color and move, you're talking about a minimum of 250,000 synapses. Butterflies vary according to species, but none of them have more than 5,000 synapses. Therefore, they can't form a visual. Therefore, you were a man dreaming you're a butterfly. And I sat down. Now, that wasn't the point he was going for. He wanted to convince your kids that were each paying $25,000 a year that everything they'd been told by mom and dad was optional, then there is no reality. So he went on to explain that what it really meant was that we can't know anything because everything's a figment of our imagination. So my hand went up, and I said, are you a figment of my imagination? And he said, yes. I said, is the table in front of you a figment of my imagination? And he said, yes. I said, so what would happen if I picked up that table and hit you with it? Would it hurt? Now, that's actually a really tough philosophical question, but he wasn't having any of it. So he went on about a 10-minute tear on the board there with formulas and everything else on how we can't know anything. So my hand went up. And I said, how do you know? And he dismissed the class, and I got them for the last 10 minutes. Friends, don't let the world frighten you. Don't let them back you up. What are they going to do to you? Oh, they might kill me. Oh, make me go see Jesus. Yeah, that's frightening, isn't it? It's horrid. You know, they might make me lose my job. Yeah, I get that. And it can be pain. But here's the deal. You've only got one reality. Know what is real and what is right. And decide to reframe everything you hit. If you're falling out of an airplane without a parachute, enjoy the view. Out of all of your options, that's really the best one. Because if you're screaming and crying, you're going to miss it. It's not like you're going to see it again. So you go, oh, look, I can see my house from. But you get the point. The point is, you have a choice in the way that you look at the world. You can watch television and they'll say, panic. Because that's what they do. You know they do. They'll come on. It's 5 o'clock in the evening, and they'll say, is something in your kitchen posing a grave danger to the health of your family? News at 11. What if I wanted to get a drink of water between now and then? You don't have the need to let the world scare you. Let me talk to you very seriously here, people. Christians never fear. Fear is not an option to us. I'm not afraid of dying. Well, there are certain ways of dying that I'd rather not do. Yeah. Yes. Someone asked me once, I teach a death and dying course, and they said, how would you like to die? And I thought, what a strange question. I said, I'd like to die from injuries sustained from falling off my wallet. I mean, what do you want? I'm not afraid of dying. I'm not afraid of losing. I'm not even afraid of getting old and not being invited to speak at places. I'm not afraid of that, because that doesn't knock down one of my touchstones. Not a one. And if the government tomorrow decides to become all capitalist or all socialist, it will not affect any of my touchstones. If the world goes to war or goes to peace, it won't affect any of my touchstones. What are your touchstones? What do you hang on to? What's important to you? But tomorrow we're going to talk more about what remains and what flows in the river and leaves us. But my time's out here. I've got to quit so that you can get to the next place. But I want you to remember this. There are things we know. And Paul stood up before a group of people that argued about every point of doctrine. And he said, all I know is that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. He lived among us. He died for our sins and was resurrected on the third day. That's all I know. Do you understand how important that is? Because 99% of our arguments were just thrown out the window by Paul. He wasn't arguing about music and about elders and about how to establish this and whether you can support that and what kind of this, that, and the other you're allowed to do in a worship service. That was all gone. He said, this is my touchstone. Like Martin Luther would say long time later, here I stand. I can do no other. So help me God. I'm looking forward to talking to you tomorrow. God bless. Amen.